surround yourself with just a couple key people that are going to potentially have the biggest impact on you and your business in the next 12 months. So just think about where you want to be a year out. And that could be joining the right sort of professional community, just because there's so many of those. And I'm not just saying consider SPI, I'm saying sure. Like consider any other one that might make sense for you in the next year. Because I think the cliche is usually true that you are the average of the five people you surround yourself with the most. Yeah. And often that can change in different points in your life cycle, right? As a person, as well as a professional.
Thank you for tuning in to Hacks and Hobbies with your host, Junaid. We're visited by our amazing guests coming from all walks of life. We want to learn their story, their struggles, and their journey on how they got to where they are today. So stick around.
In this episode, we get to speak with Matthew Gartland. He is an entrepreneur with 10 plus years experience and 4 exits to date. His career spans the media, education, tech, and e-commerce markets. He specializes in leadership, business, product, and finance. Today, he serves as the CEO of SPI Media, a pioneering brand in the creator economy. He's also an advisor and investor in creator-focused tech startups such as Circle, Supercast, Karat, Hey Summit, and Elective. Matthew shares his remarkable journey from the corporate world to the dynamic realm of online entrepreneurship. Discover how he leveraged the power of content, community building, and tech innovation to thrive in this digital age. If you're looking to make the leap from the 9-to-5 to entrepreneurship or seeking strategies to supercharge your business, this episode is a must listen. Matthew, thank you so much for coming on to the podcast.
I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me on.
And so I've followed you and I've met you for the first time through the SPI Pro community. And I was like, wow, this guy is really cool. So much about business, so much about managing and making sure that everything is like tip-top condition. And I was like, that's something that I need to learn and implement in my business as well. Because as an entrepreneur, as somebody who has passion towards different things, we go and do what we know, but then there's always that next level that you want to get to. So I would love to just to get a little bit of detail on how you got started. Share your origin story, when you began, what essential thing got you into where you are today.
I got started like a lot of us, including Pat, in that 2010 era of the internet, mm-hmm. the blogosphere. At that time, I was in a fast track executive program inside corporate. I had a focus on innovative IT solutions for business problems. That was my focus. And loved it and was doing well, but was always an entrepreneur at heart, probably like a lot of us, right? I was the kid selling lemonade and baseball card collecting and turning my collections into different opportunities. And around that time, the confluence of just what was happening on the web, again, the emerging blogosphere, just with where content management systems, WordPress, everything was going and accelerating. And because I have a bit of a personal passion and background just in storytelling and everything else, it was like a perfect storm in a positive sense, right? Like a lining of the stars. Yeah. So I left and blew the heads apart of a lot of my corporate friends and my executive teams and whatnot else. So it was a hard decision to make. Like, again, I think a lot of us have to contend with as entrepreneurs in different moments of our own journeys, but it was one of the most profound and important ones that I made. So I left to get into startups, web-based startups. And it quickly led me to meeting folks like Pat. He wasn't the first person I met, but I really wanted to start building my entrepreneurial career somewhere at that intersection of web technology, because I have a background in tech and product. Mm-hmm. Web product and in content, because my personal interests and elective studies in the Arthurian legend and the monomyth, Joseph Campbell's monomyth. Now we now know of as the hero's journey that pervades everywhere. So anyway, that's what I wanted to do. My first venture was essentially just what we would now think of as a creator studio or creative studio. Mm-hmm. Now those are the buzzwordy terms.
Yeah.
Back then it was just a creative agency, right? And we were working with some really amazing nonfiction authors on their books. That was like our wedge to get in and build client relationships, mm-hmm. was to work on manuscripts. and get them ready for publication, either with self-publishing, because that came right on the heels of the blogosphere, was the whole Amazon KDP revolution.
Yeah.
So we were really primed for that. But then we got into just about everything from a content, digital content standpoint, from the strategy. So going from literally nothing to coming up with a concept, then all the way through production. The only thing we didn't do was like YouTube and get into video work, but podcasting, email marketing, guides, back when guides were really big, the Chris Guillebeau sort of guides. Certainly then premium courses. And when that really blew up in 2015, 2016 was the front end of that side of the market. And I know I'm telling a long story. I love that. Because it does lead into then Pat. Pat became, he was a client, became a dear friend. We became almost like pseudo business partners. I was helping him. He was asking me for a lot of advice. So then the end of the story is that I pitched Pat on almost like a marriage, right? Like a business marriage. Hey, like we can do more together and have a bigger impact if we join forces formally. So my creative team, essentially my company, merged in with SPI, the brand and the assets of the brand and everything else that we had obviously played a big role in helping develop over the years, but that Pat created from the get-go. And then we, you know, produced a baby, right? Like we made a new company as a result of that. And that's where we are today.
Man, that's so powerful. Just to take a peek into what got you motivated and where you are, the blogosphere, like the internet is coming together. It's so much easier to produce content. That's back in 2010 with WordPress and all the different things. Like it really changed for a lot of us. Okay, I can do this on my own without a whole lot of technical knowledge. Right? Because back before then, like back in the 2000s, you would have to know ISS or IIS and the web technologies and HTML, all like all of those fun things. But then with this growth of the startup WordPress and what it was able to do for people, I think it enabled a lot of us to go deeper into what we loved to do by creating content and whatnot.
Yeah. And then being able to connect that to maybe Stack with the whole notion of audience building. So not just create content for content's sake, but be able to, because of the CMSs and the innovation with email marketing platforms also in the same era, which are just a certain type of content management system in my mind,
right?
Like the ability to then develop a devoted direct sort of audience or listenership, if you're in podcasting, all this sort of stuff was really starting to pop off and collide in a positive way. So yeah, that was, it was a golden era of the internet when I think back on it.
That's so true. And what's funny is that as you talk about these things and the journey that you took, it's almost mirrors what happened 100 years ago with the book industry, with the libraries, right? With, because exactly the same thing's happening, but in the physical world, but now it's now shifting over to the online world. And I think we're in this new era of video creation where literally anybody and everybody has the tools that they can go out and create video content and video podcasts. And we've seen that growth just happen in the last 3 years where millions more new podcasts just emerge out of the need of being able to connect with others.
Yeah, there's absolutely a pattern there. You're dead, at least in my view. Mm-hmm. When you zoom back and look at other just tectonic innovations of industry, you think about the Gutenberg printing press and just other like marquee, obviously the entirety of the Industrial Revolution. Yeah, but then playing it forward into tech, these days it's everything kind of AI oriented and how fast that is having an impact on our ability to generate content in different mediums, including video, including audio. Like it's nuts these days. So there are patterns. And some of the pattern that I think is important to maybe quickly highlight, right, is that anytime there is a thing that has a high barrier to entry, one point in time, podcasting had high barriers to entry. It was difficult to do, right? As soon as those barriers start to come down and come down fast, there is a just flood right into the zone. Because those barriers are lower. So then the more average person, maybe when it comes to certain tech skills or whatever else that couldn't do it before, now can, and that's amazing. But what you also get is a massive proliferation of kind of the gray matter of either books or podcasts or now even communities, which is obviously our business. Platforms like Circle and others are making it that much easier to build communities. And that's why we're seeing just exploding potential and growth in community markets, which is great. But then also at the same time, there has to be a recognition that you're going to not always have every community be of like a certain top caliber, but that's true again in every category.
It is. And I think it all comes down to who's managing communities, who's running the communities, who's the person leading the other groups, and how motivated the people are, because there are some communities where you have thousands of people, but very little activity. And then other communities might have just a few hundred people, but then the activity level is so much higher because of that close connection and the journey that people in that community are already in. That's something that I'm still looking to build around my podcast, around my things that I've been working on. So it's good to hear that this is the next thing. Like people say, hey, what's the next big thing? The next big thing is that has already happened. The question is, when are you going to step in and utilize it for your own community or for your own brand and whatnot?
Yeah. The community management point of emphasis is critical. And you know that from your own work and from being in our community and probably, I'd guess, a couple others, because a lot of us, including me, including Pat, we are also members of other communities, and it's great. Yeah. And the ones that really do shine, there is a certain magic in terms of the facilitation that is transpiring from the person, if it's a single person kind of personality driven community, or if it's a couple partners together, or if they have a team. We're blessed to have a team. That facilitation quality, it's almost everything in my book in terms of the stickiness, keeping members around, because at least in perhaps a spicy opinion, not to say that it's gospel, but with community building, to really cork that magic, you need to get members to stick around for each other, not just you, right? Like you hopefully over time become less important almost, right? In terms of the retention factor for keeping people there, because they build relationships, they connect with each other, they're sharing of information, helping each other organically. Mm-hmm. And if you've done a good job on the front end of playing the matchmaker, setting up the right kind of connective tissue experiences, then that stuff will happen.
Man, that's so powerful, because I keep thinking on, okay, what am I missing in my own community and what can I do it better? And the more I think about it, the more you share the facilitation part. And I love facilitating, like even events in my home. Okay, here's all the stuff that we can do. And here's like a board game set up. Now go play. So I'm like always the person facilitating these events. And I was like, okay, maybe I can do that in my own community. But again, to be able to do that, I got to have a plan in place too. So I want to go deep into like community building, or how this collaboration between or the new company that you're able to create, like how can somebody do something similar and for their own communities, let's say. So let's do it like a deep dive and what really made sense.
Yeah, there's, I guess, a few ways that we could approach that. You can give me some direction if I'm drifting me in an unhelpful direction here. One, I would say just the real value and uniqueness of a good partnership that a lot of us in the entrepreneurial space maybe don't think about, or we don't start from that place, right? We're solopreneurs, and I'm not knocking that. It's just an acknowledgement that most people start from that starting point.
Yeah.
As did I, and as did Pat, right? Quite frankly. But along the way, it became increasingly clear to me, not just even like me to Pat, but I've had other business partners. I've been a founder or co-founder in other ventures. I've had some exits. Like I've had some more than a number of failures as well. Like you spend enough time being an entrepreneur, you fail. That's the background I'm drawing on for this comment, which is to say is that if you can find another person to potentially really lock arms with and really share the weight of being the entrepreneur, because it is lonely, it is tiring in your early days. There's a lot of inertia you got to overcome to get some momentum going, hopefully in a positive direction, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you can find another person that complements your skill sets, that shares a vision and common set of values, I think that's a beautiful thing. And I encourage more entrepreneurs to consider it if it feels right for them on their journeys. It certainly, again, with Pat, made sense on both sides of that relationship when the time was right. It wasn't forced. We had spent, close to 7 years building a relationship, right? Yeah. First from just our transactional client relationship when things started, and then we can friends and then became really close friends. And I became Uncle Matt to his kids. So there was such a long, almost kind of courting process there.
Yeah.
So point one here, which is maybe a long, is to continue or to consider a business partner at some point, to find someone, again, that you might be able to really work with. Find someone, if it is truly like a new person, maybe that you're looking for bumping into, maybe don't rush into tying the knot formally. Again, sure. Like find some dating, quote unquote, ways of dating to test the working relationship. But if it tests out, then maybe, yeah, seriously consider that. Beyond partnership, what I think about in terms of our business model, and this was a big element to the conversation with Pat in 2018, we tied the knot officially at the end of 18,
yeah.
Was a discernible commitment, like a real serious commitment to changing what we wanted to do, not in small ways, but in significant ways in terms of the business. We were obviously doing well, but we had challenges and adversity to overcome. We were already starting to feel some notable headwinds just in the market of DIY core sales. So this was, again, coming out of 2017, which was, if I recall correctly, our high watermark. 2018 was more challenged. It was even more challenged in 2019. Yeah. I even play that ahead. But we were already feeling it. So it's okay, how can we innovate? How can we stay current, right? Where is the market going? What are new trends to really try to tap into and stay, as we've always attempted to do, and I think have done well, which is to lead by example and kind of be out front and be able to then turn around and teach that back, right?
Yeah.
To our students and now to our community members. But also not do it just to like chase market trend, but like, how do we want to genuinely evolve ourselves?
Yeah.
We wanted closer, more intimate relationships with our students. We had attempted that, like most people did back then, with Facebook groups and all these other things that were almost secondary, tertiary add-ons to a course product, right? And they were okay, but they really weren't what we now think of as deep-rooted, vested community that at some point, the real epicenter of community is not content, right? It's connection. So that was the vision, or maybe in a distilled way, the vision that was the undergirding a lot of the conversations Pat and I were having. And a big reason why was, okay, we can go do this. Let's go for it together and try to build that. So then for anyone else listening that has a community, because again, we're talking now in 2023, not 2018 and 19. So it's far more common these days. But yeah, what we knew then, but still I think underestimated, was that it was going to be a level of work that we hadn't done before. We were already working hard, but like it changes. It wasn't just production. You're not just writing and editing and publishing, right? Mm-hmm. You have to check in with people. You need to be thoughtful about the events you're running and then show up and hold the room, right? And develop facilitation skills. This is not audience building. Audience building is a very different thing than community building. So for anyone endeavoring into that, either solo or with a partner or beginning to build a team, just be that much more mindful perhaps of the responsibilities that you're taking on to try to do that.
Yeah, I think that's really powerful. I think it also depends. All you said, it's absolutely on point, because I've seen that happen in the SPI community and the other communities that I'm part of, because there are people that are facilitating the conversation, or there are group members that are also assisting. So I think the other thing that I've seen is moderators, bring in moderators in your communities that can help facilitate or bring that same energy. So again, having that top-down, I guess it's top-down leadership or bottom-up community building. It's something that still I'm struggling to grasp it, because I want to apply it in my own community. But again, I need to be there myself. I need to post more content there.
Yeah.
Perhaps
as a sticky idea, and I love how you started to talk about like top-down and bottom-up sort of orientation. I think this translates quite well to community building. It's also a very established like leadership principle at large, if you're building a team, which is to promote and elevate other leaders, right?
Yeah.
So if you're building a team, for example, and this won't be true maybe for everyone that you get onto your team.
Sure. Yeah.
But it's like trying to have a really good pulse and develop really good instincts for talent, finding talent, recruiting talent, hiring talent, training talent on your team. And then through that sort of composition of understanding of that person, their goals, their aptitudes, can you find more leaders to promote up, right? To help you.
Yeah.
And that again, flips back, I think, quite nicely to community building, at least how we've generally attempted to do it. Yes, with our team, but I love your emphasis also on moderators, or we think of them almost as teaching assistants, like TAs, right? Yes. And there's different language that gets used for that sort of a person, right? That's a real rock star and ambassador within the community that, again, look for that, reward that, highlight that, recognize that, right? Do really good things there, and then try to get them a little more involved as recognized authority figures in your community. That helps you. It helps the community. It helps with this whole notion of this connective tissue that you're trying to build and bind the whole membership together.
No, I love that. Thank you so much. The parallel between corporate structure, employee, whatnot, or to community. It's almost like when you have a family, you have the mom and dad and you have the kids, and then it's like top down. And then, but the kids were like, hey, I want to do this. And then the company gets involved and do that project together. I think community has the same kind of mirroring effect, because after all, we're all humans and we want to find that synergy and that similarity in what makes sense for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just throwing a lot of language at this stuff. At some point repetitive, but another sharp form of contrast, and I think contrast is a great communication device and teacher, is that this isn't social media. It's not public network, right? You're not tapping into public channels. Again, that is largely aligned just with audience building, the goals and incentives and whatnot that are attributable to those endeavors, right? Which that's not really my cup of tea personally. I love being like really hands-on and rolling up my sleeves with the with community building, because it's private network. It's more intimate. It is something that is, depending on how you're designing your community, guarded, right? Like it's a safe space. Yeah. You're guarding on something, right? We help so many entrepreneurs reclaim their time and their focus, right? Because on the outside of a community like ours, there's any number of distractions or, you know, competing interests or things that draw them down. The whole, I would call it almost a little bit like the dark side of some of the stuff we do online, unfortunately, the comparison games that you do with other people on social channels. It's built in, unfortunately, to, you know, what the big tech platforms do, the social platforms. So anyway, we try to genuinely provide a refuge, not just to relax, but then to reclaim that time and energy and refocus it on what really matters to your business. How can we help you get from here to there with whatever it is, whether it's a revenue goal or trying to build more capacity into your small business, which might speak to staffing in different ways, including like VAs and outsourced sort of persons. So yeah, some perhaps useful additional distinction.
I like it. So as you're moving forward, and I'm sure there's new plans coming into way. And I think I like the fact that there's also has to be the complementary, like, expertise, right? So complementing each other, like if you are bringing a partner, then the complementary, like things that I'm not good at, I need to bring somebody who can fill in those gaps of what I'm not good at. And then I'm doing the same thing for them.
Oh, absolutely. So yeah, speaking to the business partner, no doubt that's true. It's almost a life partner in some way. You're trying to, the phrase of trying to find your better half, a little bit corny or cheeky, but it comes from somewhere, some level of truth. So yeah, I think that works. And when at least I think about that, maybe extrapolating it right to just the business at large.
Just the business.
Yeah. And in most businesses, large or small, the business at large takes on the characteristics of the key persons. So the founder or the co-founders, or again, whatever the kind of the leadership and ownership structure is, which I realize, largely if you're a solopreneur, those may feel like heady concepts, but I promise that they do track. It just, they would then take on the characteristics of you. Mm-hmm. So the more that you can potentially find complementary attributes to bring into the business by way of a business partner or team building, or just what you do in terms of your products and services, right? You add resiliency into your business because you're no longer potentially just one dimensional, right?
Yeah.
That's not to be confused perhaps with losing focus on, say, your market positioning, right? Mm-hmm. Or staying niched, or all of those things are true, but you can still bring in levels of resiliency into your business and remain focused on an addressable market segment that you're trying to serve. So that's how I would, and increasingly I enjoy speaking. So I'm glad that kind of popped up today, because the kind of the brass tacks of it all, the facts of it all, at least here in the US, is that most small businesses don't make it. These are national statistics that are widely circulated. Forbes and Inc. and everyone else reports on them. They come from the US Bureau of Labor Statistics. And almost like clockwork, every year we still see in the data that around 50% of small businesses aren't around at year five. And about 20% of them go away in one form or another at the end of year one. And then there's further attrition from year one to year four.
Yeah.
And when we call ourselves creators and online entrepreneurs, I think sometimes that language is a little bit unhelpful because maybe we think we're special and mm-hmm. we're not a small business owner. We're not a part of that data set.
Right.
But we are.
We definitely are. Yeah.
We are. So I think the motivation to try to help entrepreneurs find increased levels of resiliency and build into that deliberately in their business is, at least for us, a really critical piece of our purpose and intention for existing and what we're trying to do, so that ultimately the lifespan of the people that we have the pleasure of helping from a business context mm-hmm. is extended. We're trying to extend the lifespan of as many small businesses as we can.
That's really powerful. And you're absolutely right. It's interesting what we're trying to accomplish and having that complementary factor. Sorry, I'm like totally.
No, you're fine. No. Yeah. What we're trying to accomplish, I could easily, Junaid, drift into strategic planning as a big thing that I do really well. And I coach a lot of people on, and we do it for our company and blah, 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 blah. I won't go down that rabbit hole too far. Sure. I promise. Not today. The one thing I will say is that in what strat planning as a formal business discipline helps with is the maturation of your goals. Like your goal for next year, or goals plural, especially if you achieve those goals, then should hopefully set you up for not just larger, right, but potentially very different goals than the following mm-hmm. year, right? Like mm-hmm. the goals should change and evolve over time, right? So maybe we're still like a North Star, and this is again where strat planning language is helpful, because goals are different than objectives. I promise not to go down the rabbit hole, so I'll stop there. Yeah. But I think the point you're starting to hit on, which is another critical one, is that I think the ultimate, like why we do this as entrepreneurs, is to achieve financial freedom and independence on our own terms, levels of success on our own term. But here's the unstated part that so many mm-hmm. people don't say out loud: to achieve those things
forever,
right? To achieve those things until, I don't know, the business gets passed on mm-hmm. or really with no end in mind, which is, again, flagrantly different than saying, hey, I just want to make six figures this year. The unstated part is, no, I want to make six figures the year after that and mm-hmm. the year after that, and maybe have that level grow, but also maybe not work as hard, maybe be able to build a team. So this notion that I think is, again, understated and said out loud is the longevity factor of what we're trying to build.
Yeah.
So I think marrying those two things together is critically important. Yes, we want to achieve levels of income and financial independence on our own terms. That's essential. And to do it for as long as we can, the longevity side.
No, I totally agree that. And besides that financial freedom, I think the one thing that people forget to focus on is also the time freedom, being able to do anything and plan for, hey, we want to go on a trip. All right, sweet. We already have systems in place that they can continue to work while I take time off. So systems or business still keeps on going, and having that time freedom to be able to do that, that Pat mentioned, he allocates 20% of the time of his week to scratch that itch, right? So on Fridays, he's just working on the one thing that's not part of the business, something new, experimenting and whatnot. Having that ability to do that, I think, is also something that we don't focus on, because we're just hustling. And then by the end of the month or end of the year, I'm like, okay, what did I accomplish? Am I better off than where I started? Is this making me happy? Where's that happiness factor?
Completely right. That is very famously the Google principle. I think it's the origin point of the 20% rule. And it's great that it's pervaded so much of I guess you could call it startup culture, right? Which we as small or solopreneurs and creators, like we fall into, we're running little startup companies. We are. Mm-hmm. They're just not tech companies.
That's right. Sort of thing. These are not tech companies. We're still startups.
Whether it's 20%, like I think the exact number is less relevant. Heck, if you get 30%, that's probably better. Right. If you're able to design into that in terms of your workflow and whatever else, your operations. But yeah, it's more like the intention behind that, right? Is trying to, in fact, build capacity to do work or to deliver on whatever it is that your business promises to deliver, whether it's a service-based business, you are a production company, or you're a specialist in some form of media, or you're not even on the internet in a big way. Like maybe you go to communities like ours to learn and develop, but maybe you have a lawn care company. Maybe you run a mom and pop brick and mortar shop in your local community. All of these, I think, important intentions in terms of like how we work and the future of work, which are really big terms these days, especially coming out of the pandemic, are useful to engage on and think about how we build capacity into our little companies, our little small businesses. And even if you're a company of one, even if you are just a solopreneur, how can you still build in new capacities into your business so you can reclaim some of your time? You can find that 20% or whatever it is for you to stay fresh, to rejuvenate, to just enjoy life. And maybe in some way also innovate on something, right? That ends up coming back into the business. That's helpful.
No, absolutely. Having that, having those multiple things, I think is really powerful. And thanks so much, Matt. Let's take a quick break. And when we get back, you'll share three hacks that entrepreneurs can implement in their lives and their business and get an immediate upgrade.
Are you ready to amplify your business? SPI Pro is your gateway to elevate your entrepreneurial journey, offering cutting-edge education, immersive training, and interactive collaborations. Whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned pro, SPI Pro is the community for you, providing you access to professional networking and advice to accelerate your growth. To join, head on over to hacksandhobbies.com/SPI Pro. Join SPI Pro and transform your unique journey into a success story. Again, head on over to hacksandhobbies.com/SPI Pro.
Hey guys, welcome back. We've been talking with Matthew Gartland over at SPI Media. He's a serial entrepreneur. He's been doing some amazing things over at SPI Media, building communities and making sure that there's support available for entrepreneurs like you and me who want to grow to that next space, to the next level. And SPI Pro has been an amazing place for me to hang out with because I've built some really good friendships over there. And can't wait to share even more on SPI. But Matthew's got three hacks that we can implement in our businesses, in our entrepreneurship right now. So Matthew, take it away.
All right. Some of these will reflect back on just naturally the conversation points we hit on in the first segment. For better or for worse, it might be a little bit reinforcing. So number one is to surround yourself with just a couple key people that are going to potentially have the biggest impact on you and your business in the next 12 months. So just think about where you want to be a year out. And that could be joining the right sort of professional community, just because there's so many of those. And I'm not just saying consider SPI, I'm saying like consider any other one that might make sense for you in the next year. Because I think the cliche is usually true that you are the average of the five people you surround yourself with the most. And often that can change in different points in your life cycle, right? As a person, as well as a professional. Yeah, that's hack number one, is just to like reconsider where you're spending your time with what people and potentially find a new place to go, you know, for the next year. That's really going to help you challenge your thinking, right? Help you make better decisions, develop maybe some new skills, right? That helps the business in the next year. Yeah. Maybe as a 1B, if I can quickly maybe be creative with the point, just because we talked about partnership and that's so important to me. Maybe in the next year, you think about surrounding yourself with a business partner in some way or beginning to test the waters in that capacity. So a bit of a callback to that part of the conversation. Number two would be is to revisit your goals and consider a framework to really dial that in for the next year also. It's so easy to drift and just add work. So many people, entrepreneurs and well-intended entrepreneurs, to be clear, right? They confuse doing the work with the goal themselves. For example, having a podcast is not a goal, right? It's a great thing to do oftentimes, but that is a potentially well-deserved strategy that aims at producing a goal or delivering on a goal, right? A result, right? And since we're talking here and discussing all of this in November, the new year's coming soon. And sometimes that's arbitrary, sometimes it's not. So yeah, what are your goals for the next year? You shouldn't have too many. They should be quantifiable in nature. There's different frameworks out there that you can use that help guide you, and you can find templates online. But I would say as a real hack is isolate three, just like three goals to keep you oriented and keep you focused that you could have on a piece of paper on your desk or have something that's on your desktop, on your computer that you can look at regularly. So you stay centered on really what matters to you so that other things come along the way within the year, even if they sound exciting. There might be opportunities masquerading, or I should say distractions masquerading as opportunities. Yeah, just get narrow on three and define them as quantifiable and use those as your kind of signals along the way. And then the third one is just very tactical, but look at your calendar, right? So many things creep into at least my calendar, right? So what is your week-to-week workflow? And your calendar is typically a barometer for that. When we go on podcasts and we try to show up in maybe other people's communities and we're trying to find time to do our own work, build a next course or serve our clients, whether they be coaching clients or whether they'd be businesses that you're performing a service for. So it's a good time of year also to just look at your calendar and maybe revisit the kind of block and tackling of your time across the week. I think a week is a really quality, is my foundational unit of time. Thinking in days or even hours, certainly not hours, it's almost a farce at this point. And then thinking in months is useful too, but like a week is a really solid unit of time. So I'd say, what is your ideal week? Maybe script that up, compare that against what your calendar looks like today. And if it doesn't look the same, make some changes.
I love that. And I totally love the last one because that's something that I've been implementing for the past few months and really dialing it back because I had some travels and I was like, okay, how can I make my calendar more for me rather than the people that are booking time on the calendar? So that's an excellent tip for sure. Number one, getting clear on who you're serving and what your goals are and maybe keeping an eye on that. And that's something that I need to work on because even though I've been running this business on Home Studio Mastery, right? Helping people with the setup, I still feel because I don't have the right goals in place maybe, or maybe I'm not just doing all the right things that need to be done. So definitely something for me to work on for myself. And in number two, when you mentioned...
My number two was actually about the goals. The first one was about the surrounding yourself with the right people, exactly. With communities. Yeah. And oftentimes, those two things can really butt up against each other, help each other, right? Where,
yeah.
Again, if you begin to court a business partner, if you will, or if you've joined a new group that you think is really going to help you in some big professional way in the next year...
Yeah,
those same people can help you with your goals, right? Give you this sort of feedback that you may need, right? To expose a blind spot or kind of uncover a bias that you might have in terms of how you're thinking right now. And so long as you are open-minded and going into those sorts of opportunities with either new relationships or expanding existing relationships with everything we talk about around humility and vulnerability, which are important qualities, then I think you'll be able to listen and actually receive what you need to help you dial in your goals.
Absolutely. And that's something that I've been doing for the past few years too, being part of masterminds, being part of other masterminds, just so that we can connect with the right people, have the right people in our circles so that we're always growing. And instead of looking at what we're not doing, actually taking action. So thank you so much, Matt, for the three hacks. I really appreciate it. It helps me to take action and put the right pieces on the chart and have that strategy in place.
That's well.
All right. Sweet. Let's jump into the rapid fire questions that I like to ask. Number one. Now, exploring uncharted territories, name a hobby you've always wanted to dive into, but haven't yet. And why?
Scuba diving, learning to scuba. Just it's tied into my explorer sort of spirit. I love adventure. I love traveling a ton, international travel, and just fascinated with the planet. So yeah, want to learn how to scuba dive.
I love that. There's been a reel popping up on my feed all the time. And it says, the world is not on paper and books. It's out there. And then you'll see this huge, beautiful scenery of a snowy mountain or an ocean and whatnot. It's really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Next up, rewinding time. What childhood dream job did you aspire to, and how does it contrast with your current career?
I at one point was very convinced I'd become a doctor, and more specifically a surgeon. And that could not have been more misguided, because as I certainly got into my, I guess, into my adulthood, thinking on that and having friends that are doctors and whatnot, I would not have been any good at that. I wouldn't have been able to stomach it. Sure. Yeah, I certainly admire a ton that profession, but it was, I think I liked like the academic challenge, because I love studying and I love learning. And so the process of becoming a doctor or a surgeon was very compelling, but I think then like being one.
Yeah.
And yeah, actually I'm thrilled I didn't go down that road.
But I think in one way you did go down that road, but not for humans, but for businesses.
Maybe. Yeah. Doctor for businesses. Hadn't thought of it that way. Or business owners. Yeah.
Business owners. We got to figure out what's not working, go deeper into it, figure out the problems and make it work. Next up, from screen to life. Can you share a movie or TV show that entertains you and offers a lesson that resonates with your life or career journey?
This might be a bit of a stretch based on the question, but I am a massive dinosaur fan. And the original Jurassic Park movie from 93 was, because I'm a 80s kid, Pat and I have the exact same birthday from the early 80s. So like when that came around, it was like world shattering when you were a kid. And that still sticks with me. But I guess for the question, it's really important to just learn from history and try to derive the right sort of lessons and patterns.
Absolutely.
I'd say also, at least with dinosaurs, like they actually lived. They were real things. So there's a certain majesticness and awe. And to me, again, being the nerd that I am about it, to think that these things weren't just dragons out of a fantasy novel or some other mythical creature that never actually did walk on this earth, but these were actual creatures of great diversity and longevity in terms of how they ruled for millennia on the planet. So yeah, like I draw a lot from that source.
But that's really interesting, because it takes me back to like conversations I've had about religion, about where we come from as human beings, because if the dinosaurs lived at the same time as human beings were on the planet, I don't think human beings could have survived. So the fact that the dinosaurs had to go before the human beings arrived is also an indication where Adam and Eve, they were created in heaven, but then they were put on earth because of the whole eating the apple and doing the wrong thing. I don't know if you've ever thought in that space at all, because I talk about religion in other circles, but that's something that I don't really bring up. But that's like a contrast. Okay, if dinosaurs really walked on earth, where were human beings at that time period?
Yeah, it's definitely something I've drifted in and out of in terms of thinking about it.
Yeah.
In terms of like business context, how I guess I extrapolate from it and maybe apply it is that timing and sequencing is so important, right? Like what comes first, what comes second, right? Yeah. When we think about the transformations we're trying to achieve in our small businesses, it is a really useful and I highly recommend like good first step to take stock of your current state. And then as a quick kind of fast follow, once you get that accomplished, is to, with strat planning and probably some other tools and methods applied, think about your future state and begin to describe that. So those things that you can do that in a few weeks or a month, maybe with coaching or whatever else. So now you have like your starting point and your ending point, but then how do you get from here to there? And there's these famous diagrams from famous artists online of like the squirrely lines that often happen between the A and the B, point A and point B, to illustrate just how crazy of a journey it often is, especially if you don't have help along the way to guide you and keep you focused on all these things. Yeah. And so much of it, again, I would flip back and emphasize is sequencing. Like maybe now is not the time to have the start of the podcast, right? Maybe you want that, maybe that makes sense, but maybe that's not the next thing that you should do. So yeah, sequencing, critical thing to try to work on.
I love that. All right, let's scroll back to the question. Imagining yourself on the solar screen, if you could embody a character from any movie, who would it be and how does this character's journey mirror or contrast with your own?
Oh, heavens, that's a great question. I adore some of the kind of spy thriller movies. So I'm talking Jason Bourne for sure would probably be maybe number one. James Bond's more established. I love the recent Daniel Craig sort of incarnation of those. What I like about those sorts of characters are that they're incredibly accomplished in their craft, which is something that I care deeply about. They're very versatile, right? They can survive and fight in that reality on the silver screen, right? In a lot of different environments, and they can still win and come out on top. I think versatility as a business owner is a critical thing to think about as well. And then also maybe a little more for just me personally is they operate in the shadows, right? Like they're supposed to be people that like, yes, they're in a movie, right? But like the broader world doesn't know that they exist. Like who is Jason Bourne? And at least for myself, like I've always brought on that, I guess that part of whatever identity I have online, which is a lot of people don't know who I am. And that's perfectly fine with me. It's, I guess, to a significant degree, something that I've even created. I've been called like the secret weapon for Pat and other people in my career. Cause again, like I'm not the one that's out there trying to develop a massive Twitter following or anything else, just not who I am. It's not part of my motivation set, but nonetheless, I still like being the Jason Bourne figure behind the scenes.
Man, I love that because when I posted on my Facebook, hey, I'm going to be talking to the CEO of SBI Media, people were like, is it going to be Pat? Is it Pat?
Right. Yeah. That's, no. I get that a lot still. So
All right. Next up. Navigating through the world of superheroes, this is the world that I love. Who's your favorite? Who and is there a particular trait they possess that you wish to embody or believe you already do in your professional life?
Yeah, there's maybe a small bit of overlap with the whole super spy. I wouldn't call them superheroes.
Right? Sure, yeah.
So we're talking DC, Marvel, stuff like that, which I also adore.
Yeah,
massive Batman fan from my childhood. These days, more adulthood and professionally speaking, I think about Steve Rogers and Captain America, right? That character in terms of his origin story, not per se being the one that people thought would become the big leader, super soldier that he obviously became.
Yeah.
And truly representing the notion, at least in the MCU and not just the movies, but the comics and everything that came before it, of the leader, of the person that's going to bring the troops, right? And rally them together and keep them focused and lead by example and kind of lead from the front, which I definitely try to do as much as I can. It's hard when you are out front being the entrepreneur and when you have a team and trying to lead through change. So yeah, I love that character for that reason.
Now, one of the scenes that you probably remember was from Avengers when the Chitauri are raining down and Captain America comes to this police officer and he's like, take these people out here, dude, here. And he goes, who are you? And he turns around, beats down like three aliens. And then he like stands there and he's okay, do what the man said. That was a pretty cool scene where it just shows the authority. Like, hey, this is what I can do. When I'm telling you to do something, it's because I know what's better for all of them.
Yeah, speak softly, but carry a big stick sort of idea, which is a Teddy Roosevelt famous quote that I love.
I love it. All right, last question. If your career or personal journey was a board game, which one would it be and why? And is there a strategy in the game that you find applicable in real life scenario?
We share a lot of common interests, clearly, because I love board games. So this is just a nerd fest like crazy, which is outstanding. So I've played a lot. Settlers comes to mind just with like different resource allocations. It's a strategy game. And entrepreneurship is a strategy game when you boil it down. I'm pretty firmly opinionated about that. Maybe as a more cheeky reference, I would think about like Jumanji, which it's a jungle out there. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's hard. So much of it is the luck of the dice roll sort of a thing.
Yeah.
I could analogize it to D&D. I've been a dungeon master. I don't know, so many things, but maybe we'll just stick with Settlers. First thought.
Yeah. I love it. Sweet man. Thank you so much for this time and your wisdom. Where can superpreneurs find you?
I spend a lot of my time, if it's not maybe been that clear, but probably has been today. I spend a lot of my time inside the private community, right? I don't do a lot of social stuff. You can find me on LinkedIn. That's if I'm going to be anywhere, like just Google, or not even Google, sorry, whoops. But just go to LinkedIn and like type in Matt Gartland and you'll find me. But really, I'd say if you wanted to consider it and connect and hang out and learn as well, like the SPI community. So just go to smartpassiveincome.com/ All Access is our kind of main community membership. Give that a check.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Matt, for your time. And we'll be sure to include the links to your LinkedIn and other places like SPI Pro Community, All Access Pass, people can get into on the show notes. And until the next episode, thanks so much.
Thanks, Junaid.
Congratulations, you made it to the end of the episode. Thanks so much for listening to our guest on this episode. Please send me an email at junaid@hexandhobbies.com to tell me what you loved about our guest today. You could find links mentioned in this episode on the hexandhobbies.com website.